So, as Calvin said, I'm the medical director in a health center in the South Bronx. Seem to be working. Okay. And I have no disclosures to make. So a little about the site I work at, first of all. This is a medium-sized site providing primary care to about 6,000 patients in about 30,000 visits annually. About two-thirds of the patients are Hispanic and about a third are African-American. We see about 20% of our patients without insurance. About 55% of the population is pediatric and 45% are adults. The HIV patients we see, we have about 100-110 patients, equally male and female, from all ages, from 18 to 74. About 35% have contracted HIV from IV drug use, about 35% heterosexually, about 10% may have sex with men, and the rest are either a combination or unknown. So what I wanted to do here is briefly sort of reflect on the trends we're seeing of HIV infection in the US, and to look forward over the next decades about how community health centers might best be able to address this, both in terms of prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of HIV. So this is just one of many sorts of slides that you could look at that show pretty clearly, and this is looking at new HIV diagnoses, and this is actually from the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. And, you know, the thing that jumps out is that the rates are obviously clearly much higher in black and Hispanic patients than in white. And this is the sort of this is reflected on lots of different studies. Also, with the CDC has recently revised some of its estimates to show that the number of new infections is actually larger than they were estimating previously. And again, the breakdown there shows something like 55% black, 20% Hispanic, and 8% white. So this is a map of New York City, and mostly you will see the red areas that show the highest rates of new infection also coincide with the poorer areas of the city. The one exception is in Manhattan, the toward lower Manhattan, that reflects the Chelsea area where there are a lot of gay men. And so that skews the concept that, you know, this is really a disease of poverty more and more. And this arrow shows where our health center is. So you can see that we're in the zip codes with especially high rates of HIV. In fact, our rates are three times the national and double the city rates of new HIV infections. And the data is kind of interesting when you look in a little more detail. In fact, in women, a full third of new infections in blacks are now occurring in women. 83% through high-risk heterosexual contact. In fact, black women are 15 times more and Hispanic women 4 times more likely than white women to be diagnosed with HIV. Still, the group that has the highest numbers of infections are men who have sex with men, about 53%. But again, if you look at that in more detail, what's interesting is there are some groups that stand out where we should be especially concerned. Black men who have sex with men between the age of 13 and 29 are in fact the largest group of new infections for HIV. So why So how does this all tie in with being a community health centre? Well, it's interesting, of the last five people we've diagnosed at our health centre with HIV, it's an exact mirror of these national trends. Three were women of colour over the age of 40, and two were men of colour under the age of 24. So it's kind of interesting when you actually see these big numbers playing out in your little community health center. That's exactly what we're ending up seeing. So how do community health centers, how does that come into play? Well, I would say that in many communities, the community health center is a mainstay of healthcare. Unfortunately, it's also emergency rooms, but community health centers are also a big player here. This is what I got when I tried to search for a photo to represent stigma, but those of you who did biology will remember that that is in fact a stigma. But clearly this is huge. You know, it's a huge barrier to care, both for prevention messages, for testing, for treatment. And I think community health centers have a huge advantage here. Also, if we think about who community health centers see, we see a lot of heterosexual women who come in for pregnancy tests, for family planning, for pap tests. We see young men who have sex with men. We also see patients who are at risk and who regularly attend but aren't usually considered the highest risk groups. And I'm thinking particularly of elderly patients who notoriously are diagnosed late in the course of the illness of HIV and AIDS. Also, if you think about the people who are hardest to reach for prevention and testing, think about how they interface the healthcare system. You know, I'm thinking about the people who do not come regularly for scheduled appointments. They certainly go to emergency rooms. They go to non-medical sites such as community centers, drug treatment programs, needle exchanges, case management agencies. But they also come to us a lot as walk-ins for any number of things. It might be pregnancy tests, STDs, family planning, emergency contraception, but really any type of walk-in. You're presented with an opportunity to see someone who may not connect with the medical system any other time. So thinking about prevention, and here I think it's really important to think about prevention in both HIV negative and HIV positive individuals. Clearly the most powerful tools in prevention are socio-political, they're the things beyond what I can do in my health center. You know, things like funding for needles exchanges, sex education, condoms, empowerment in general. But I think at the smaller level, we can have a direct impact on these things. Certainly making counseling and testing for HIV more routine, making systematic reminders to test for HIV when it's appropriate. And I'm thinking, for example, of things like a negative pregnancy test. You know, if a woman comes, is concerned she's pregnant, ends up not being pregnant, that might be the only time they're connecting with the health system. But it's also a time when you're seeing someone who's had, an unintended exposure, not only possibly to pregnancy, but to HIV. Certainly doing more education with our providers around this patient education. And rapid testing is something that I think definitely has a place, although there are some concerns now about how many of these rapid tests, you know, the first round can come back positive and it's only on further testing it ends up being a false positive. So there are some concerns about how to apply rapid tests. Also, the CDC has recently been promoting prevention in positives, which I think is something that those of us who are working in places where we're treating people living with HIV and AIDS, should also be remembering to do. And also the idea of antiretrovirals themselves being a prevention strategy is an interesting one. Certainly people who are in treatment and doing well are much less likely to infect a new person. What are the key elements? Sorry about this cheesy slide, but I was trying to think what the key elements are about having an HIV program in a community health center. I think we've talked about access. We are already in the community. We have better access for prevention and testing to people who might not connect with the health system otherwise. A stigma, we've already mentioned that allows for better access by it being really no stigma in going into a community health center and having a visit, very different to going to the hospital or to the ID clinic. Also, the idea of a family-centered model of care, I think, is critical. You know, there's so much around HIV that is above and beyond the medical piece of care. Issues around disclosure, support systems, prevention, family planning. These are all sort of core things we do in primary care community health centers. Also, the team approach is very critical, both with on-site and off-site players. Managing comorbidities. I mean, it's rare I see a patient where HIV is the problem. It's usually one of four things going on, and it might be the fourth on the list in terms of importance. You know, if you're dealing with someone who's homeless, who's in a violent relationship, who has uncontrolled diabetes, you know, your visit may not be focusing on their HIV that day. But that's something primary care physicians are kind of well familiar with juggling. So I put this together just to sort of represent, I guess, what I was saying, that, you know, the medical care is a core piece of what needs to happen if you're going to provide HIV care, but it's certainly not the end of the story. And in fact, the HIV specialist piece of that is often only a piece of that. The education and support is huge. The concrete services, the mental health is critical. I don't know if people are aware of the American Academy of HIV Medicine, but they are an organization that goes about credentialing primary care physicians to become HIV specialists. And so they're an organization that particularly looks at primary care physicians and has a process you can go through to get credentialed as a specialist. And you have to be re-credentialed every 2 years. You have to manage enough patients that you have enough experience. And you have to do their exam every 2 years. The off-site, many of these things, by the way, we don't provide on-site, but we have linkages with community organizations, such as the case management and obviously the pharmacy. We don't have those things on-site, but building good relationships with other community players is critical. And so just to sort of reassure anyone who's thinking, well, maybe you don't get such good care in primary care sites who are trying to look after HIV patients, I think we're slowly sort of gathering information, at least on a local level, that supports the idea that you can do really get good results by applying this sort of model. And these are just five of a large number of measures that we track at our site, which is part of a larger network of primary care sites within our hospital system to make sure that we are providing good care. Probably the key one here, I would say, if you're just to look at one, is the yellow line. That's looking at the people who are on treatment who have a suppressed viral load, and that really is kind of the most important measure. And that number, you know, not everyone is ever going to be able to get to an undetectable viral load, so you're never expecting it to be 100% because people may have multi-drug resistance. But this number, along with the others, is pretty good and actually a little better than our state benchmarks that look at programs elsewhere in different settings. So how can we affect the impact of HIV in the community? I think this is a sort of key slide, really, because it's not just about the treatment piece. It's about the prevention, the testing, the treatment, and then the prevention again. It's the entire cycle. And when all three pieces are in place, I think that has the best chance of affecting the impact of HIV in the community. One thing just to put out there, I think is often underlooked, is the issue of non-occupational exposure to HIV and post-exposure prophylaxis. In other words, people having unsafe sex who come to you as a primary care physician the next day, you know, there are things that post-exposure prophylaxis is now something we should be offering these patients. And if anyone wants to have a great 800 phone number that is 24 hours a day where they will give advice about that. And then the last slide is really just summarizing then. I think, you know, in terms of policy looking forwards, we really need to think about moving HIV care away from being a hospital-based, ID clinic-based option. Not always doing that, but certainly having other options available for some communities. And I think in the community I work, this idea of bringing HIV care into the community makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I did want to just thank the CICERO program is the name of the program which gives us all the data back about our site, which is a Ryan White funded program, which is really helpful to us. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Meacher. Now I would like to introduce to you Dr. Willie Oglesby. He is a research associate at the Institute for HIV Prevention Leadership, which is a CDC-funded capacity-building program for minority-based, community-based organizations located at the University of South Carolina. Dr. Oglesby's work is in community-engaged scholarship and organizational capacity building. In this session, Dr. Oglesby will be presenting a paper summarizing research on the strategic planning practices of a national sample of community-based organizations that provide HIV prevention programs. Dr. Oglesby.
Thank you.